Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to another session with Urbanite Radio Stories. And out of this issue, we're talking with Scott Carlson, who wrote the story Ground Rules, and about eating your lawn. What does that mean, to eat your lawn? We're about to find out what it means to eat your lawn. Probably not a bad idea if we think about it pretty deeply. He lives in Rogers Forge, where he's been helping his neighbors dig up their lawns and plant edible gardens. A story he tells in this month's issue of The Urbanite. He's joined in studio by John Tronfeld, and John is director of Home and Garden Information Center and a State Master Gardener Coordinator at the University of Maryland Agricultural Extension. So, Scott and John, good to have you both in the studio. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Right. Thanks for having us.
Appreciate you coming out of the beautiful sunshine into the darkened studios here that we have. But
yeah, it's great.
It is nice to have you both here. So, John, let's start with you. This article you wrote for The Urbanite. So, I'm laughing only because I know what this means, what you've done to have dug up part of your front lawn.
Yeah.
And planted a vegetable garden, and not in the back, where some people might think it's appropriate to grow a few tomatoes and cucumbers, but on the front lawn.
On the front lawn, yeah. I bought the house in 2005, and we started, it was an old rundown row house in Rogers Forge, and believe it or not, we do have some
rundown row houses in Rogers Forge?
We have them, yes. I found, you know, various drug paraphernalia in the walls of the house when I was renovating
really?
It. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, even in Rogers Forge. And
I'm not shocked by drugs in Rogers Forge, but that just shocks about the rundown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the rundown part. Yeah. Yes, it was there. And so we had a big expanse, a front lawn there, and we had a big tree in the backyard. And I'd long been a gardener since I was basically a teenager. And I grew up, my mom was a farm girl and taught me a lot about this stuff. And I just said, you know, I own my own home. I have my land. It's not much land, but I want to do something with it. I want to have a garden. And so I started piece by piece just digging up the front yard. And it wasn't very big at first. It was only a few tomato plants and some lettuce here and there. But it grew over time. And this year it's approximately half of the front lawn. And it's also taking over parts of my neighbor's lawns as well.
He's agreeing to that, though.
Yes, she came over to me one day, and we have this shared strip that runs between the two sidewalks, our two sidewalks up to our front door, and she just said, you know, your garden is great, and I wish I could do this sort of thing. I don't have a green thumb, and I'm not having much luck with the shrubs here, so I hope you would just take over the rest of this spot.
That you own collectively?
Yes.
The two of you? Yeah, two,
yes.
Two properties.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's grown to the point where neighbors, a friend of mine, Joe Hamilton, is now torn up his backyard. Another neighbor has started a compost bin and has a bunch of tomatoes. There's an older woman in her 80s who lives across the alley, and we've persuaded her to give up a portion of her backyard for these raised planters for tomatoes and peppers and all sorts of other things.
Hmm. So I understand, though, there was some opposition to this.
Absolutely.
Move on your part to turn your front lawn into a farm.
Yes. Well, even my next-door neighbor, the woman who gave me part of her yard, she had said that it was jarring to her at first. She didn't really get it.
Why do you think, and John, feel free to jump in, you might have had experience around the state around these same issues. Why was it jarring?
Well, because the lawn is sort of the default setting for any neighborhood. It's the default setting. When you buy a house, you get a lawn. And when you do something that changes that situation, when you do something that sort of takes a detour from that sort of landscape, people don't know what to make of it. Even though that setting, the lawn setting, is in history a relatively recent phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Through the 1930s and going back before that, lawns were mainly things that rich people grew. The blue-collar people in Philadelphia and in Baltimore and in all sorts of other blue-collar cities, they use their lawns, they use their yards for utilitarian purposes.
And what does that mean?
Growing vegetables, in part.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of new gardens in my neighborhood in Ellicott City, and they're located wherever the sun is. It may be the front yard, it might be the backyard, it might be the side yard, but the sun is the critical thing. And I can appreciate what Scott's saying. Back in the early 80s, I lived in Nashville, and I put 30 tomato plants in my front yard, a rental house.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a few raised eyebrows. But, of course, once the harvest came in and we were spreading the wealth through the neighborhood, then people sort of thought it was a good idea.
I was telling Scott before we started that I lived in Windsor Hills on the west side of town by Leacombe Park for 25 years. I love the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a big fan of lawns. But so I planted – I had vegetables on the side of my house and in the back. But I planted a portion of my front lawn in corn, silver rose corn, and I kind of planted it so that it would grow over the summer and into the fall so that I'd have a corn coming in constantly.
Sure.
And some of my neighbors didn't quite like the idea of having a cornfield in the front lawn, but some did. And I tried to share my corn with people because it was just the idea of being able to go outside, pull off several ears of corn for dinner, fresh, right off out of your lawn. It's the most amazing taste on the planet.
You started to look like a genius.
Not then, but maybe now.
Well, and what's interesting, you make an interesting point, and that is that you weren't a big fan of the lawn. And that's sort of the point that I'm trying to make. You know, the lawn is, horticulturally speaking, it's a useless crop. I mean, there are lots of things you can do with lawns. I mean, you can run on them. We'd like to have our kids play on lawns. That's great. But they don't produce anything. And in the most sort of pristine, perfect, quote-unquote, lawns, they don't support a whole lot of life, not the same sort of life that's supported by a flower garden or a vegetable garden.
Well, let's talk about it first of all, just in terms of the neighborhood, because, I mean, you live in Rogers Forge, which is a neighborhood that's kind of on the boundary of Baltimore City and Baltimore County.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of separating the city from Towson in some ways. And it is kind of known as kind of as a fairly a white, upper middle class neighborhood with lovely little houses and front lawns and a Rogers Forge Elementary School and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming more diverse than it used to be in terms of the population, I've noticed, in terms of Latinos, Asians, Arab Americans, all kinds of people moving into the black folks, all kinds of people moving in. It's not what it used to be,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing, I think,
yes.
For my book.
Absolutely.
But you've had some opposition to having vegetables on your front lawn, which changes the nature of a neighborhood. So let's talk about what it means that kind of controversy is and what has happened. And, John, your experiences with that as well around the state. So talk about your story here a bit.
Well, you're right. It is diversifying. The neighborhood is diversifying. And there's what a lot of people don't realize is that Rogers Forge is composed of these pristine little townhomes in sort of the area that most people think of as Rogers Forge. There's also this apartment complex that's next to the townhomes
mm-hmm.
that is also technically part of Rogers Forge. And a lot of the people who live in the apartment complex, they come from different from your quote-unquote typical Rogers Forge background being white middle class. Folks, Chinese immigrants, Latino immigrants, and so on. And they come from a different sort of economic level. My friend Joe Hamilton and I started this group called the Rogers Forge Farm Initiative, where we want to encourage our neighbors to grow gardens in their lawns. And part of our overall plan is to go over to the apartments next door and to establish community gardens that not only provide gardening space for the lower income people who live in those apartments, but also provide a space for people in the townhomes who don't have suitable yards to come over and garden in these spaces as well. And through that, they would be able to meet people from different backgrounds who all live in the same neighborhood to form this sort of gelling in this community. That's really what a community should be about. That's what a neighborhood should be about. It's not this sort of false idea that, you know, to be part of the Rogers Forge community, you have to have these perfect, monotonous, pristine types of lawns, this sort of unified vision of what our landscape should be.
Go ahead, John. So how does this play itself out beyond neighborhoods like Rogers Forge in Maryland?
Well, to put it in a larger context, of course, there's a lot of interest in food gardening this year. And we started a Grow It, Eat It campaign at the University of Maryland to promote food gardening. And the conversion of lawns into food gardens, we think, is a good thing. I think it is a higher use for the land ecologically and in terms of, you know, getting something you can eat from the land. So we have a website. We've got a lot of energy going. Master gardeners around the state are educating people. Scott's story, when I went out to visit him and then he shared with me what, you know, the consequence of the new garden was, he got a letter from his homeowners association, really got us thinking about paying closer attention to what will the homeowners association's responses be. And frankly, I haven't heard any other folks calling us and saying, you know, you told me I should go plant a garden, but now I'm being told, no, it's against the rules or the neighbors don't like it. So I think we're going to be watching that closely. In the case of Rogers Forge, you know, anything we can do to help desensitize folks to, you know, what a vegetable garden means and how it can be a plus. One thing I've noticed throughout my career is that food gardens do get people talking in a neighborhood. I worked with the community gardens in Baltimore for 5 years, and, you know, they gel a community. They bring people together. And the same thing happens even in a residential neighborhood where people have individual, you know, private backyard or front yard gardens. You know, people want to check out what you're growing. And it does break down barriers, especially when you see unusual crops, things you're not used to. It can get people talking, and that's a good thing.
So I'm fascinated by the piece that, by the way, we're talking. You just heard John Tronfeld, who's director of the Home and Garden Information Center and a State Master Gardener Coordinator at the University of Maryland Agricultural Extension. He's here with Scott Carlson for one of our Urbanite radio broadcasts. In the August 2008 issue, Scott wrote a story about the garden that he's building in his neighborhood. And he lives in Rogers Forge, and he's been helping his neighbors dig up their lawns to create vegetable gardens. The story is called Ground Rules. And so let's just – it'd be interesting one day to perhaps have a conversation with lawn people and people like you, mm-hmm. you know, at a maybe a later date to talk about this. I'm curious about this kind of tension and maybe ways creative tension about turning your lawns into – vegetable gardens. I mean, we interviewed not long ago Michael Pollan, who wrote Omnivores Delight, the idea of kind of creating these gardens and about becoming self-sufficient. I know that over in Lauraville, every Tuesday night they have all the people in the neighborhood come together in a building that they're trying to create as a town, kind of a town meeting place, a flea market. And inside that flea market, people sell the vegetables that they grow to their neighbors and others who stop by. But these were vegetables grown in your backyard.
This is the Hamilton Crop Circle people.
Yes, right. Hamilton, right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's fascinating. I mean, you bring up Michael Pollan. Michael Pollan said that we've never really developed a gardening culture in the United States quite the way that they have in other countries, and that's because we've married ourselves to these two diametrically opposed visions for the landscape: grass on one side, pristine wilderness on the other. It's possible to have landscapes that are manipulated by us, that are useful to us, that are still not grass. And yeah, there are a lot of people who like the grass thing. What I'm saying is that I don't – if other people want to have grass, that's fine. I don't think that should be the setting that is required for any sort of residential living.
Well, I mean, well, go to the history part. We'll go back to a minute. People in the gardens in America, urban gardens. But so how do you placate or have a conversation with people who have a suburban neighborhood like yours – who want their lawns, and you're now organizing groups of people in that neighborhood to have vegetable gardens instead of front lawns?
You know, it's not as hard as you would think. Once you start having the conversation with people about what you're doing and what you're growing and why this is important to you, people really do get it. Some people will never get it. But, for example, I've had conversations with my neighbors. I'm sure they thought that I was a weird guy digging up my lawn, putting in tomatoes, putting in lettuce, putting in beets, putting in beans, and so on. And there are some things that I don't do on that front lawn because I know that it's just going to cause trouble and be offensive. Like, you know, I could grow potatoes in these stacked tires. You know, if you know that technique, you put down a tire and you plant a potato in there, and it grows up, and then you put on another tire, and then you put on more dirt, and it grows up and up and up and so forth. And then you, at the end of the season, you take off the tires and you have a big mound of potatoes. I would never do that because it doesn't look very good.
You could paint the tires.
You could paint the tires, I suppose. I don't think they would fly in Rogers Forge. But I did have a trellis up for a while. It was admittedly ugly. Once we got the letter, I took it down. And I think
what does the letter say to you?
The letter says that a vegetable garden is not traditional landscaping. That a vegetable garden is and that a lawn and shrubs really is what the vision for Rogers Forge is.
So I wonder what you both think where this is really going. I mean, right now we have an economic downturn, but we also have a time in America where more and more people are slowly turning around to the idea of healthy food. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most healthy food, because the way our agricultural system is set up in America, is too expensive for people to afford. As I said to somebody I interviewed a little bit ago on this, that – no, I didn't interview her. It was a meeting I was in. We want to do this story, which is that farmers in Baltimore County say to me, we can't supply you with organic chickens. I mean, completely healthy chickens, because we can't afford the organic seed, because you have to ship it from the Midwest. It's too much money, and we don't have an agricultural policy in Maryland that gets farmers to produce these things so we can make the chickens that run free and make you feel better. And so we don't have policy set up for that. So people are beginning to take into their own hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. There is a big shift going on, I think. When we started Grow It, Eat It, we noticed, you know, of course, the recession was going on. But beyond that, people have been looking for local sources of food. That's a big trend. Another one that's been with us since, you know, we became more technologically advanced is people want to get into the dirt. They want to do something themselves, dig in the dirt.
Yep.
Now we see more urban beekeepers. There was an article in The Sun about folks with chickens in their backyards. That's getting to be a bigger thing. So I think we're going to have to, you know, as Scott's doing and his neighbors in Rogers Forge, talk to each other about, you know, what we'd like to see in our own yards and for the neighborhood. And I think through that communication, slowly, you know, people are going to come around to new ways of viewing their landscapes.
So, go ahead,
you know,
Scott.
That's not. I mean, you brought up the economy, and you brought up the willingness to dig in the dirt. You brought up the whole idea of wanting to know where your food comes from.
Right.
We also saw gas go to – or oil go to $160 a barrel last year. That's a trend for the future.
And it's rising again. It was down, now it's going back up again.
If you look at the futures markets, I mean, they're expecting it to rise.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live in a country where we ship food an average of 1,500 miles from field to plate. That's not sustainable under any circumstances. So this is something that we're going to have to learn how to do. The garden is not just something that sustains us physically. It's a learning process where we reconnect with our agricultural roots.
And, go ahead,
John. I was going to say, these are compelling reasons. When our master gardeners first met to cook up this whole Grow It, Eat It campaign, there were a lot of folks in the room that were saying, you know, these are dire times. Now, this was after oil had come back down.
Right.
But we're looking at, you know, trying to teach young kids how to put seeds in the ground. Maybe their parents don't know. It could even be that their grandparents don't know. So we've lost a lot of knowledge over the last two generations. And this is really, I think, pretty important for our society to, you know, not just be out there digging in the dirt because it feels good, mm-hmm. but with intention going out and growing food intensively in small areas so that we can feed ourselves.
It's frightening when you have a neighbor who comes over. Frightening, a little bit frightening, but also encouraging. In the sense that they're curious, but when they come over and they point to lettuce in the ground in your garden and they mm-hmm. say, what's that? Because it's not on a shelf. They don't recognize it.
And then what happens after he says, what's that?
That opens the door to an educational process
mm-hmm.
where you can talk about lettuce, you can talk about what you're growing, you can talk about the various plants that you're growing and why you're growing them and how they grow.
So when you do that, I mean, I was kind of tongue-in-cheek before, but I mean – we don't want to set up kind of the lawnmowers and the hose kind of fighting one another out in the street. over the front lawn. So the question is, where do you think we do take this? I mean, there are more and more people doing it. You talked in your article about, Scott, about the photographs of old Baltimore and during World War II and people with their victory gardens. Mm-hmm. And you can go to Greektown on the east side of town, and a lot of the immigrant families there in the second and third generation have vegetables and grape arbors in their backyard. And a lot of old black neighborhoods in this town, who people came from North Carolina and Georgia, they had gardens. And my first father-in-law always had a garden in his backyard, growing his own tomatoes and everything else, like he did on the farm in Georgia. I mean, so those things, that's there on one level. Mm-hmm. But people move to, you know, we have this culture where it's, you have a front lawn and you go to the Safeway, the Giant, wherever else you go to buy your vegetables. So this is, I mean, it's a shift, but this is not an easy shift.
No, it's not an easy shift.
No, it's slow. And I think as people see more of these front yard gardens, they're going to say, hey, you know what? I can do that. If that guy can do it, why can't I do it?
Right.
So it's a good example, I think, Scott's setting.
Right. And economics may help push this for us. I mean, we're facing dire economic times right now. If people can look at an 8x8 plot, which according to John's calculations yields $270 worth of produce, they might say, that's for me. I could do that. We are actually now talking to a lot of our neighbors about setting up orchard trees. So we don't have enough land to grow figs, peaches, apples, pears, and all the things that we would want to grow on my little plot of land. But if I grow an apple tree and my neighbor grows a fig and my other neighbor grows a plum and my other neighbor grows a pear, each one of those trees is going to yield more fruit than any one of us, any one family can eat. Why can't we grow all those things and then share the bounty?
So you live in the midst of this. Where do you think this is going? What about where most of your neighbors are in this kind of conversation? Tell me the dynamic of the moment.
I think that I come at it, and I know my friend Joe comes at it from a sort of a resilience point of view. You know, we're doing this to make the neighborhood more sustainable. We're doing this to form resilience, to protect it against these kinds of shocks that we might get, economic shocks, fossil fuel shocks, and so on. I think my neighbors are coming at it more from sort of a gastronomic point of view. The idea of being able to pick figs off of a tree and eat them, the idea of getting beets straight out of the ground. I'm giving away my food all the time. I'm giving away my salad. I'm giving away my beets. I'm giving away, the tomatoes that I get. And that helps to sort of get this idea going that it's not this weird thing. It's this thing that can benefit us all.
So, and you have this interesting, so just practically, I mean, this is all the ideas that are on the parts of this article that talk about the kinds of gardens that you can actually have, how you reinvent your yard. Things like, we can talk a bit about them just for a few minutes, but just so people get a sense of this. The shade yard, the row house strip, the hill yard, the no yard yard. Talk about those concepts and what those things are that you do in your home.
I can tell you, in my own neighborhood, I've got a neighbor that's got three big tubs on his driveway with tomatoes in them. He's put them in the sunniest spot. He's got some
netting
around.
You live in Ellicott City?
Yeah, to keep the deer off. I have another neighbor that just extended a perennial bed out perpendicularly to her house, and she's got a beautiful vegetable garden. Another neighbor, an Indian gentleman, a retired physician, has eggplant and peppers in his front bed where he's got azaleas, and then in front he's got these vegetable plants. So he's incorporated those.
Because flowers and vegetables can actually live together.
Oh, you
can have a flower garden and your vegetables growing in the midst of your flower garden.
You bet. And, you know, I grow garlic every year. Well, I had a new bed, and it was 16 feet by 4 feet. And when the plants were growing beautifully this spring, you know, they were like 2.5 feet tall. And some of the neighbors asked me if it was corn. They'd never seen garlic growing.
That's interesting.
I harvested it this weekend. I got 210 bulbs from that area.
What do you do with all those bulbs?
Man, we eat a lot of garlic, Mark. We sure do. But I do what Scott does. I share it because then it gets my neighbors thinking, hey, I can grow this stuff. And if
garlic,
I'm paying $3 or $4 a pound in a supermarket,
right,
I can see where there's some real value to doing this.
Yeah.
And I can get another crop in. The garlic comes out July 1st. I get beans or another crop before I have to plant it back in the fall.
It's one of the challenges of doing this gardening in Baltimore is that we all have really small plots. I mean, I grew up in Minnesota, where it's more of a Western state. Everyone has a huge, you know, 1 acre
right.
yard. Here you get this little postage stamp. So we have to some extent, rely on each other. We have to work together if we want to get all of the vegetables out of the ground that we want.
Go ahead. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
If I can just, you know, I see food gardening or food production as on a continuum. It's from the small postage stamp yard up to a farm. And what I think the future holds, frankly, is we may see more 1/4 acre up to 1 acre market gardens in suburban areas. It may be, you know, where there are large homes even. But, you know, you don't need a lot of land to grow a lot of food. But urban agriculture throughout the world is becoming much, much more important. Countries like Cuba have really become virtually self-sufficient in fresh produce by focusing on small-scale organic production. And I could really see, you know, it is already happening and it's going to continue where it won't be unusual. Not everybody has to grow everything they want to eat. Go to the farmers markets. And, you know, food gardeners are typically the people most likely to go join a CSA, go to a farmers market because they know what good stuff tastes like. But I think we're going to be seeing young, enterprising people, and I'm expecting some of the homeschool kids to get into this. If they've got a half an acre of ground at home, they may try to do some market farming.
Even city schools. That's changing in Baltimore.
City schools too,
the whole idea of kind of growing your own food for the school system and
right.
and changing
Great
that.
Kids Farm. Yeah. That's right.
One of the ideas that we have with the Rogers Forge Farm Initiative, and one of the things that a lot of the neighbors are calling for, is to establish an edible schoolyard, much the same sort of thing that Alice Waters has been doing. And
Michelle Obama on the lawn of the White House.
Michelle Obama
has kind of helped spark this thing in many ways.
And one of the ideas that we have with that is that we would establish this edible schoolyard, hopefully at Rogers Forge Elementary or at one of the area schools. And then we would offer, if we get grant money for this, which we're hoping we can do, we would offer the scholarships then to students to $100, $200, which would pay for soil, seeds, plants, planters, so that they can then establish a growing culture there at their home. Mm-hmm. It's coming. I mean, this is a movement that I think is going to continue to happen, continue to grow over time. No pun intended.
This is very exciting. And I look forward to kind of learning more about this. And I think it would be interesting for us to kind of meet your neighbors and see what's going on out there and find out what's going on. Scott Carlson lives in Rogers Forge, where he's helping his neighbors dig up their lawns and plant edible gardens. And this article, Ground Rules, appears in the July issue of The Urbanite. This is one of our Urbanite radio stories. The article is called Ground Rules. We're joined in studio as well by John Tronfield, who is director of the Home and Garden Center and State Master Gardener Coordinator at the University of Maryland Agricultural Extension Program. And it is part of our series of stories from The Urbanite, as well as part of our series on how we, funded by Town Creek Foundation, on how we live sustainably in our world and how to get there. I love this story. I think it's important, and could be the wave of our future. And Scott Carlson and John Tronfield, good to have you both with us today. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show, Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. Urbanite Radio stories on The Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Baltimore Mediation, the first mediation firm in the state of Maryland specializing in separation and divorce and business and workplace conflicts, located in Baltimore at www.baltimoremediation.com.